You're listening to Soccer Report Extra with Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to the World Cup final edition of the Soccer Report Extra podcast. We are spread right over Canada today. I'm in Alberta. Producer Luke is in Saskatchewan. And Owen, you are in Toronto.
Yes, and by the absolute beauty of technology, we are bringing this podcast to you. So that's just dedication to the cause right there.
So World Cup is over and down and dusted. France are world champions. Deserved or a bit fortunate?
I'm going to rob someone else's intelligence, and not for the first time. Somebody made a really good point, which was France, best team of the tournament, but the worst team of the final.
I was going to say that. I saw the same comment, but it was true.
I thought it was very astute.
It was. So it was obviously it wasn't one of us that said it.
I'll gladly take it and nick it and tell people it was me.
But it's true, isn't it? They weren't the better team on the day, but sometimes you don't have to be the better team on the day. Sometimes you just have to score more goals than the opposition. But which leads me to the next question, and we'll come back on some of these points. But goal number one and goal number two for France, what did you think of them?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the VAR decision was certainly a massive, massive call given the circumstance. For Croatia to get back in that game, you thought, okay, this is really delicately poised heading into half, and definitely a fairer reflection of how that opening 45 minutes would have played out. And then you had this decision that was a little bit inexplicable, to be honest. I mean, yes, you could argue the letter of the law, and yes, you could argue the technicalities, and yes, you could...
I would argue the letter of the law, and I would argue the technicalities. I think it was a bad decision.
Exactly. Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, I just think that for Perisic, normally for incidents like this, I'm quite ruthless. Normally it's somebody who's got his arm in an unnatural position, and it's a little bit of a silly decision from the defender, somebody taking an unnecessary risk. But really, when you looked at that incident, you're looking at Perisic and kind of thinking, well, particularly when you go to a video replay, you're thinking, well, what are you expecting him to do in this situation? I just thought it was very, very harsh. And ultimately, I think, the game is made up of very, very small, crucial moments. And that one was incredibly decisive.
It will be talked off in years to come, and at present as well, that, well, France still went on a win by two goals. So, what are you complaining about, kind of thing. But the reality is, and it's a cliche, but goals do change games. And if that game's 1-1 at halftime, then I'm not so sure that France go 3-1 up, then 4-1 up.
Well,
they certainly wouldn't if they got the penalty, because they would have gone 2-1 up, then 3-1 up. But you get my drift.
Yeah, and I mean, to bring it back to the first goal, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that... a lot of peculiar stuff, like, was being floated around social media about offsides and all this sort of stuff. And,
Did you see the picture of the Croatian leg?
Yeah, I just was, the goal happened, and you look at it and you go, yeah, I mean, that's a goal. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with that for me. So yeah, I mean, it was a kind of an unusual final, wasn't it? It was like, France have had their detractors, I think, very, very harshly throughout this tournament. Yeah, I mean, they were responsible arguably for the worst game of the entire competition, when themselves and Denmark played the absolute horror during the group stage. But they have been pretty cold-blooded in terms of how a tournament operates. And I think that Deschamps, I think it's probably lost on maybe a lot of people. You know, this really goes back 4 years. You know, you look at that French team that hinted at a lot of potential in Brazil. They seemed to possess a lot of good things, and you were kind of looking ahead to the European Championships 2 years later and saying maybe at home they could really go for it. And Deschamps is really, you know, in that 4 year cycle, he's had to remove a lot of personalities from that squad. He's had to make some big decisions, and ultimately as well, it came back to that level of maturity and that composure. I think best exemplified by Paul Pogba, someone who's really come in for a lot of criticism because of being the complete opposite, essentially being flash when he needn't be. Maybe you know, being easily distracted in other facets away from the game. Certainly on-field stuff. And at this tournament, he was composed, he was mature, he was really impressive.
He was 25.
Yes.
Is he supposed to be mature at 25?
Well, I mean...
Is he getting credit for doing what he's supposed to have been doing all along?
Yes, but I think...
I'm not going to be the Graeme Souness of the podcast, but he is 25 and he did go for a world record fee. You know, is it a case of he's finally doing what you're supposed to be bought for in the first place?
Yeah, but I think that, I mean, what's counted against him is the fact that, I mean, you know, he's had to, he's been essentially, I think, Manchester United being left frustrated by how he's been used. I've certainly been frustrated watching him. I mean, I can only imagine what he feels. And you watched him in this tournament being, I guess, the player we have always wanted him to be since he joined Manchester United. And, you know, I think it was quite refreshing to see that. I think that, yeah, you're 100% accurate. This is really the level of performance that we have expected from him.
But isn't this a contradiction, Owen? Because Pogba's success for France was more about playing a solid defensive role than it was about going forward. And one of the complaints we've both had about Mourinho is he spends so much time being a defensive coach. So it's, you know, see, you know, I think it's a bit of a contradiction that suddenly Pogba's playing a more, as we say, mature role, playing a role as a more solid defensive, not overly defensive, but defensive midfielder. And it's kind of what we've been criticising Mourinho for asking him to go out and do.
I think that there's, I think there's a difference in terms of what he's been doing at United. I think that there's been, you know, I've got nothing wrong with Pogba playing the role he did for France, where it was clearly very, very precisely mapped out what, you know, by the coaching staff, what they wanted him to do. At Manchester United, he still plays deep, but for whatever reason, is still attempting things, is still trying to probably juggle, you know, a couple of different things at the same time. Whereas I think with this tournament, he was, unburdened. You know, I think he had a distinctive role and I think he fulfilled it. And I think that that's the thing. Maybe it's a case of not having a proper identity within that United side, not having people around him to know, listen, here's what we want you to do. You know, instead of being pretty muddled.
Or could it be just the case that he's been asked to do it over a short period of time, so he concentrates and actually gets stuck in, knowing it's going to end in a month?
Perhaps. I mean, I think that in terms of Pogba now, I mean, you know, you could argue that he's, in terms of the World Cup performance, he's put even more pressure on himself to turn that into club form.
I would suggest he's put more pressure on Mourinho.
I mean, to be honest, I thought it was like watching two different players. You know, that there was just a level of composure to Pogba within this French team. And, you know, what struck me really was the fact that he just almost faded into the background a little bit. There wasn't. It's like anytime he's in possession of a ball at Manchester United, for whatever reason, there's an expectation that he's going to, you know, deliver a 45-yard raked pass you know, onto the instep of another player, and it's going to lead to a world-class goal, and that's going to be it. Or if when he's 30 yards from goal, he's going to take on a shot on a bend into the top corner. I think that, you know, with this tournament, he was a little bit more understated, and you know, certainly blended into a team ethic. There wasn't that same level of hype and expectation that is kind of there for him to deal with week in, week out for his club. And I think perhaps that freed him a little bit, you know, as well.
But I go back to my comment again, but isn't that the nature of tournaments in a way that benefits some players? And really why so much money's been wasted on players who have good tournaments but don't play very well after that. It really is about just applying themselves for that 7 games in a World Cup, applying themselves over a short period of time, knowing that it's going to end. Like, if Pogba played like that for 7 games at Manchester United, I think people would go, yeah, he's playing, he's doing pretty well here, he's okay, but they'd still expect more. And I think if that continued with France, if that was a kind of league, and I know the World Cup isn't a league, but if it went on and on and on week after week, I don't think it'd be long before people say, you know, can we not get more out of Pogba?
Yeah, I mean, you have a point. But I guess as well, I mean, it's, you know, the World Cup is what it is. So I mean, it is very much a chemistry experiment. You know, it's like, I guess, an Olympics. You peak for X amount of time for this particular race, and everything else fades into obscurity. So, you know, I guess that just, you know, like what you said, you know, but then again, you know, I think back to the European Championships, in terms of the caliber of his performances, I'm not sure if they were as impressive for me thinking back, as the World Cup was. But then again,
But isn't that a contradiction again? Because I know this sounds odd, but France won despite their strengths, or despite many of their strengths. Because you look, it was a deep squad. They had lots of attacking potential, but it was the stifling of that actually, in reality, probably got them to the final and helped them win the game. So it was actually, and this is the contradiction of Deschamps, actually taking, not playing to their strengths, but mitigating their weaknesses, that was the difference.
I think we can bring it back to, I mean, what we've always talked about before in terms of a World Cup tournament, European Championship, whatever it is. The free-flowing, expansive, expressive sides have a shelf life.
Yeah.
You know, they exist essentially to get to the quarterfinals or semifinals, and that's it. And the functionality of teams is what gets you to a final. And it's not necessarily the most aesthetically pleasing football, but there will come a time when you need to win games in certain ways. And I do think that France, throughout the tournament, found different ways of winning. They found different ways of getting over the finish line, whether or not that was set-piece deliveries and you know, converting those chances when they needed to, you know, whether that was hitting teams on the break at the precise moments. They did what they needed to do, and they had enough variation that they kept opponents on their toes and had enough there to keep them surprised. I think that it's very, very easy maybe to, you know, there's a couple of pieces floating around in the aftermath of the tournament that, you know, the higher caliber teams being eliminated meant that we can't really look at this tournament being one of the greatest ever because of essentially a lack of quality in the final stages. I'm not really sure. Yeah, I'm not really sure I agree with that. I think that the high profile teams were eliminated because they were poor. So, I mean, what are you supposed to do? You know, I think that...
get a mulligan.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a totally flawed point. I also bring it back to the route that France had to the final. You know, they had to get through some tricky time. You know, the Uruguay game. You know, it's weird. I got into a conversation with a really good buddy of mine, and he was he kind of put it all out there in terms of France. Oh, listen, against Uruguay, you know, Cavani got injured, kind of ruined the game. They, you know, there's a couple of refereeing decisions that favoured them completely. They should have been more expressive. They should have been more free-flowing. And you're thinking, well, is it really... Does it make that much sense to be that harsh on a team that's just won a World Cup? You know, I think they're shown.
Unless they're English.
Yeah. I think they show, say what you will about him, but, you know, the history of this French sort of environment in relatively recent times is that it can combust very, very easily. And there's a lot of ego and there's a lot of arrogance and there's a lot of stuff that you need to tweak as a coach that goes beyond what happens on the pitch. And the way that this team really seemed to blend together, I think was an extension clearly of how well respected Deschamps' style of management is. I think that he made some big decisions, you know, in terms of that squad before. But I think you compare Euro 2016 and this tournament, and that crucial ingredient was Mbappe really coming to the fore. I think it was that, you know, obviously you go back 2 years ago and level of responsibility that, you know, was on Griezmann's shoulders. You know, he was the guy really who had it all. He had a great tournament. Everything was kind of there for him. And you just kind of come to a World Cup and you go, do you know what? It has to be wider than just one player. There has to be something else there. There has to be enough of a supporting cast to get a team over the line. And, you know, what a supporting cast France had, you know, with Mbappe really just hitting the ground running. You know, it was just, you know, the flicks, the tricks, the finishing, everything was just on point with him. And, you know, another terrific goal in the World Cup final for him. So, I just think, yeah, you know, obviously Croatia were the romantic choice, and you do feel bad, you know, particularly for this generation of players. Modric is 32, Mandzukic is 32, I think Rakitic is 30 odd. Maybe one last hurrah at European Championships, but again, there's no guarantee that they may even get out of the group, you know, in terms of another tournament. So we'll see. But I think France were worthy winners after 18 minutes or whatever thereabouts of a question. I think France were worthy winners of the tournament.
So we'll take a break now and maybe come back and talk a little bit more about Croatia and look for Owen and my player of the tournament. See if we agree with Luka Modric. Maybe talk about the best game of the tournament and just a general kind of summing up of the game. But one thing I kind of leave you with is maybe the greatest the comparison I can make between France winning this tournament was maybe the way Brazil won the tournament in 94. They won it by being very, very solid but they did have that ability in 1994, particularly through Bebeto and Romario, to kind of add the cherry on the cake a little bit. And I think in Mbappe and Griezmann, they had that as well. So leave you with that thought. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with talking about Croatia.
You're listening to Soccer Report Extra. Keep up to speed with the podcast and get all the latest news, musings and rants from Bobby and Owen by liking us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to part two of the World Cup final Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bob McMahon. He is Owen O'Callaghan. And we talked about France. On to the runners-up, Croatia. Now, Owen, I've dissected this a couple of weeks ago. I feel very, very embarrassed that a team I didn't even pick to get out of the group actually went to the World Cup final and came very close to winning it. But I'm sure I'm not the only one. But the thing is, I've looked at this again, and I'm not sure, given the circumstances, I wouldn't make the same decision again. There was nothing to indicate through the qualifying campaign that Croatia were going to run like this.
I think we talked before the tournament got underway about Croatia and playoffs.
Yeah.
And their ability to get the job done when they need to. And that was the only thing. I mean, that was the only thing separating me from effectively doing exactly what you did, which was say, you know, I don't even think they can get out of this group. I just felt that maybe given the fact that in a one-off game or, you know, in a two-legged tie in playoffs, they have a bit of pedigree and to get out of jail if necessary. Other than that, you know, I would have followed the same train of thought. And it's weird. You know, World Cups are very, very strange things. And I think, you know, you look at, you know, a comparison that I made, you know, after that Argentina game was probably the Dutch in 2014, when, you know, you had a team go into a tournament and really no one was expecting anything from you. You go into a game where you're playing a high profile opposition, and for whatever reason, you just play the game of your lives. And you don't just do that. You score some terrific goals in the process. Some just, you know, you play some free-flowing football. You create really a World Cup memory in itself. And maybe you come off that pitch and you go into a dressing room and everyone's enjoying themselves and you look around and the chemistry comes into play. And there's a little bit of belief and there's a little bit of resilience. And also in a tournament, and I hate bringing it up, you get a slice of good fortune when you need it most. Because I think that, you know, you look at that group, you know, you top that group, you get a Denmark in a knockout stage, you get a Russia in a quarterfinal. So by process of winning that group, Croatia set themselves up for a very, very winnable knockout stage overall. And now, obviously, they were put to the pin of the collar quite frequently, and they showed an immense spirit, incredible grit. Again, probably personified mostly by Luka Modric against Russia in the quarterfinals, missing a penalty and then stepping up in a shootout to convert. Denmark, I should say. Luka Modric stepping up against Denmark, missing a penalty and then following it up in the shootout by scoring. It was a romantic story. It was a bit of a magical thing. It was a sprinkling of stardust. And again, you look at that World Cup final and you look at how it could have played out a little bit differently. I certainly thought that in terms of the pattern of play, you know, Croatia almost remarkably played really well and at one stage were 4-1 down, and you were kind of left scratching your head a little bit.
At that situation at 4-1 down, I was thinking to myself, these headlines tomorrow are going to be brutal.
Mm.
They're going to be about France have come in. I could see another one going in as Croatia pushed forward. I could see headlines of farce of a final, France walk all over Croatia, and it would have been so sad and so inaccurate, because it wasn't a 4-1 game at that point by any stretch of the imagination. So almost we'll have to give Lloris a little bit of thanks for screwing things up. And thank you, Hugo Lloris, for maintaining my position that once in a big game, he always screws up.
The other thing is that you know, you had that situation that was completely inexplicable, where they got that second goal. And in terms of the pattern of this tournament, you actually had a moment where you looked around and went,
it could have happened.
Could they do this? Like, there was firstly, the goal was crazy. I mean, there was so much crazy stuff going on in that game generally. I just really thought, you know, before Mandzukic, you know, pulled that goal back, I just thought they looked knackered. I thought a couple of their players looked just as if they were gone, and quite rightly. I mean, they just had so much mileage, you know, on their legs. And then that second goal, and you think, could they do it? And you know, it was just a little bit too far for them in the end. It was weird. The kind of sentiment of, what an awful World Cup final. Did you see that kind of sort of commentary that was appearing on social media during the game? Where, like, yeah, quite a few people that I follow were just chirping away, going, "Oh, this is brutal. You know, this is what a terrible final this is." And I'm thinking back, going, "Like I've seen some bad World Cup finals. This is not one of them."
Brazil, Italy.
Yeah.
To name one, and there's a lot more I could name as well. Like, that was a good final, and I think, you know, certainly the the Lloris screw up in Mandzukic scoring, I think put a better representation on the scoreline. But it did, as you point out, there was, it crossed my mind, if they get another one here, you could see France going into free fall, because there was a jump about Croatia after they got that second goal that was quite unbelievable. They were still first to the ball. They were still taking men on. And here's a question for you, Owen. Can you think of a more fearsome and physical front three than Perisic, Rebic, and Mandzukic? Wouldn't you love to go to war with these guys?
You know, I liked Perisic coming into this tournament. You know, there was an element to his game that I really admired. Mandzukic, yeah, you know, certainly, he's almost, again, probably largely underappreciated, perhaps. But Rebic, I didn't quite know as much about, admittedly. But I have to say, in terms of the headlines being dominated by the likes of Modric and Rakitic so frequently, there was something great about that trio.
There was.
You know, it kind of taps into that wider fan favorite territory that Croatia find themselves in. Like, yeah, you know, I think, you know, they had a couple of cult heroes. Like, I think, I'm sure Vida makes our best 11 in terms of the tournament overall. Even somebody like Subasic, who I'm guessing may have been about 70% fit even going into that World Cup final, you know, after his exploits against England. So I mean, there was a lot to admire in the Croatian side, and I think as well, I think Alex Oliga, who wrote a terrific piece, I think, for The Guardian, just about how something like a World Cup run can paper over so much that's gone wrong with your country's federation, with a domestic game, with levels and allegations of corruption, and suddenly, you know, there's a World Cup final. Your president is, beaming as she's congratulating and hugging and kissing every player while wearing her jersey, and she's going to every game, and she's not expensing it, and she's flying economy class, and she becomes a symbol of something else. We're in the midst of political chaos, and here's this woman who tells everyone really how they should be leading their country, and you get another great example of something special in the Croatian waters, but then you kind of read the actual reports from the country itself, and there's a kind of a red light to say, hang on a sec, you know, a World Cup will, it kind of, you know, it pulls a sheet over what's actually going on, and obviously it gets everyone in a party mood for a while, and it kind of, again, is what a World Cup is. For the teams that do well, it's immense. You think back to 1998, you think back to that French win, and everyone banging the drum of, look at this united country, and look at the black players and the Arab players, and, you know, all of these players from different cultural backgrounds. This is the real France. And within a couple of years, there's the same far-right ideologies, peering above the parapets, and suddenly that gets more momentum, and suddenly 1998 is completely lost. The European Championships 2 years later, completely lost, and it just becomes a kind of a memory, and you just hope that this World Cup, you know, doesn't have the same sort of legacy for something like France, but I'm sure it will. You know, give it a couple of years, and I'm sure you know there'll be retro pieces being written about it, and think pieces saying, you know, does anyone remember, you know, how beautiful the French team was that won the 2018 World Cup, and how much it meant for the country, and blah blah blah. So it's, yeah, the World Cup is a bizarre kind of thing in itself, and it kind of almost lives in isolation. And like what you said at the top of this segment about Croatia, that never in your right mind would you have predicted that their team would get to a final. You know, you had people saying, oh, here are my predictions. I predicted Croatia would reach the World Cup final or win the World Cup or something. And you're like, what we'll tell you that that was a ridiculously stupid prediction to make because it made no sense. You know, like, I mean, you have to predict things based on form and history and tradition. And, you know, that was just a, you know, you might as well saying, you know, I don't know, you know, Sweden will win the World Cup. It's the same type of thing. But the World Cup is a bizarre, inexplicable competition. And in many ways, the final kind of perfectly explained that.
You look at it and I think, it's a continual lesson, and maybe this is what sport teaches us beyond soccer and to all levels of sport, is it's actually using the hand you're being dealt with in the most advantageous way. So, you know, Modric, I think you know, I know, some of the listeners out there might not know, but Luka Modric has got himself in very hot water and essentially purging himself in a court case with a former Croatian, I believe, former president of the FA in Croatia, and saying things that were blatantly untrue, and the public perception of the Croatian FA is so bad that he was not popular at all. In fact, very unpopular. But you look at that. You look at Italy in 2006, the situation they went into, the one in 1982 when they were basically at war with the media as well, but. You using these things to kind of fuel, and then you look at an Argentina situation this time round, and as soon as Argentina began to fail, everything was pointed to, well, look at them, they're a screwed up FA, they're bankrupt, you know, they're incompetent, they're corrupt, blah blah blah. Well, but that's not necessarily a reason. It has been shown to be more an excuse.
You know, I bring it back to Wenger. You know, Wenger said that. I just thought it was just so amazing that, you know, people are just so quick now that there needs to be something, you know, a decision made very, very quickly. So you don't even wait now to go to the doctor. You just go onto Google and you diagnose yourself. So you do not seek out an expert for their advice because you just want something, you know, as soon as possible. And I think that in a similar way, there is a fear of grayness in the current society. It's not good enough to kind of put your hands up and say, I actually don't know why that's happened. It's kind of a weird one. You have to commit to something. So, you know, it doesn't make sense for somebody to say, isn't it so bizarre that Croatia have reached the final? Instead, there needs to be, it's like when Iceland are doing well at the European Championships in 2016, there needs to be a wider investigation into, look at all of the pitches they have, look at all the coaches that, also as well, sometimes a team comes along and it just does really well in an isolated tournament. You know, there's also that element to it.
But all it really needed was to be put on the front page of Sports Illustrated to bring that to a crashing end.
Yeah, you know, or you know, you just need to be seen to commit to a particular storyline, because to do otherwise is just not allowed anymore. You're just not allowed to say, I don't know. You know, it's like politicking 101. I mean, you don't see any politician step up on a pulpit and say, when they're asked a question, actually, I don't know that answer, but give me the, you know, a couple of hours and I'll talk and I'll come back and I'll give you a proper. Instead, it's political speak where you just roll around in circles and you don't commit to anything.
And then come back 24 hours later and claim you didn't say that. You said the opposite.
Exactly. That's now the world that we live in, you know, which kind of opens you up a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, like from here on in, does it, at every press conference now, do you have to say, sorry, but I'm sorry, Sean Dyche, when you said that, you know, you won that game fair and square, did you actually mean that you didn't win that game fair and square and that was actually unfair for you to win that game? We just want to see clarification on this. It kind of opens things up a little bit. But yeah, I think that that's kind of so, like, you know, as you said, you know, there's very, very odd, strange things happening behind the scenes in Croatia. And yet, their football team reaches a final of a World Cup. They do something for the very first time in their history, and it's a celebratory thing. But you shouldn't excuse. It's like Russia, you know. People thinking, you know, people, you know, you had the, you know, the all of the media who are in Russia for a tournament, kind of saying, I've had an absolute ball over here. It's been a joy. I mean, I've only met the best people. It's been so wonderful. And you kind of think to yourself, you scratch your head, you think, well, what did you think was going to happen? You know, like the Russia held the Winter Olympics in 2014. And there was a lot of stuff said in advance of that as well. And it just passed without any incident, because that's the beauty of a closed country. That, you know, when you hold sports events there, you know that people will take care of business. Any difficulties that will arise, you won't know about them because they'll be taken care of quietly and in a certain manner. And you can expect the exact same thing in 4 years' time. And the thing is that nothing exists in isolation because it's not allowed to anymore. There has to be some sort of in-depth, deep discussion and analytical drive to figure out why it happened. You can't just turn around and say, you know what? Sometimes weird things happen. And because there's no weirder competition than a World Cup for conjuring inexplicable things. And I think that this is another example of it. I mean, you even look at the eight teams that made it to the quarterfinals. Russia making it to, you know, quarterfinal stage of a World Cup is absolutely bizarre. Sweden, it was just very, very strange. You could argue England making it that far was unusual. But again, you know, you need to somehow justify this, and you need to go into detail about, why the Brazilians flopped and why Croatia were great. And then tomorrow you wake up and you write the complete opposite, because everyone's got goldfish memories now and they don't remember things as well as they used to. But that's just the world we live in right now, and football is just an extension of it.
So we've got a couple of minutes left on, so we're just going to go round or down some awards and see if we agree, disagree, look at the alternatives. Best goalkeeper of the tournament?
Best goalkeeper of the tournament? I think the general consensus was the correct one. I think that the Courtois completely, you know, flicked a V sign at me in my general direction. I think I questioned him before the tournament began, possibly after the tournament even began. But he was great. He was really great and deserving. I think you look around at, you know, as you said, I think, and you're right to talk about Lloris in those concerns that you have.
He made the FIFA team.
The FIFA team was the biggest load of bullshit I've ever seen in my life. You know,
how the friggin' hell did Neymar make that team?
Was it Paulinho? Was that Paulinho in central midfield?
Paulinho was in it. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know if these people watch the same games.
There should be a steward's inquiry on that one. Doping tests applied to the technical group.
I think any other goalkeepers of note? I mean, like, you even go through it. So many of them made absolute howlers.
Subasic, I thought, played well until the final. He dropped down a little bit in Pickford. Pickford was great.
Pickford was strong.
A bit of a revelation.
Yeah.
To me, confident, enthusiastic, bright. I thought, you know, goalkeepers have got a long time to mature, but he looks like he could be around, cross fingers, because despite what I say sometimes, it's not the English team I dislike, it's usually the English media I dislike. But I have a lot of time for the players, and I thought Jordan Pickford was absolutely excellent.
Yep, agreed.
You look beyond that, you know, I think, you know, you're into some. Kasper Schmeichel had a couple of good games, but you've got to stay in the tournament. I think you've got to stay in the tournament. You've got to get to at least to the last eight. You've actually really got to get to the last four. And I think it's shocking that, you know, Paulinho's in there, Neymar's in there, absolutely abusive of power. But anyway, so there's not an award for defender of the tournament, but who would be your best defender?
You know, I had a soft spot for him all through the tournament, and listen, we've both waxed lyrical about how great the Uruguayan central defensive partnership was, But I think Vida for Croatia was very, very infectious as a defender. I think he was relentless. I think he was resilient. And I think, he has enough crazy in him as well to play that role.
And he's actually quite quick. He's not so quick on the turn, but just in a straight foot race, he's actually pretty quick.
There was a couple of moments, particularly in that England game, when he had to face down Walcott. Walcott, Jesus Christ. Raheem Sterling, I should say. Yeah. And, you kind of went, oh, he's in trouble here. No, but he recovered very well and was calm when he needed to be. Popped up with a crucial goal, obviously. And also, his team get to a final. So he's gone through the entire tournament. And yeah, I think Vida for me, I think he ticked a lot of boxes.
And he can go back to his day job, which is an extra in the Vikings.
He was an extra in Vikings and also an extra in Taken with Liam Neeson.
So, player of the tournament. I don't think we're going to disagree on this, are we?
Jordan Henderson. Did you have him as well?
Second choice.
So, sorry. Okay. It was a close run thing between Jordan Henderson and Luka Modric. And I think both of us have given it to Luka.
Just barely
by the skin of his teeth.
He was just brilliant.
Absolute
joy to watch.
There was a couple of isolated things. Maybe it's boring for certain people, but watching Modric when he didn't have the ball.
Oh, the way he moved that French midfield around in the first half was absolutely was an education in itself. The positions he picked up, his ability to move the ball quick and then find an opening to actually take a return pass or a pull a French player out of position. It was like watching a surgeon at work as he dissected that midfield. He was absolutely terrific.
Yeah, just like a conductor with his baton, and just directing his orchestra. And he just... I mean, the phrase, pulling the strings was just, when you looked at him and the way that he's actually, by his movement and his positioning, the way that everything is revolving around him, even though he may not necessarily have had the ball at his feet, was incredible. And I just think, we live in this era now where you have figures like Pirlo who are adored, even well into retirement. And, Pirlo was good. Pirlo was on his day great, but a World Cup tournament like this, Modric taking his team like Croatia and having that sort of impact and influence, running obviously alongside everything he's accomplished in his club career, this really should go down as a masterful World Cup tournament for Luka Modric. It was a pleasure to watch him, really.
And maybe a chance to double up and win the Ballon d'Or this year. Maybe there's an opening there. Best game of the tournament.
Best game of the tournament. Oh, this is a real tough one.
It is, because I've never talked about this one yet. Nobody's asked me on any of the radio interviews I've done.
Well, I kind of bounce back on various ones. For whatever reason, one of my favourites was Belgium-Japan. I just thought it was absolutely nuts. I really loved the France-Argentina round of 16 game. I thought that even Brazil against Belgium in the quarters was terrific. There was so much tension to Croatia, England in the semis. This is tricky.
Spain-Portugal,
yeah, terrific as well. I think in terms of goals, maybe quality, maybe end-to-end stuff, maybe I'd give it to France-Argentina, but, there's... And it's weird, World Cup games just roll into the next one. You actually have a difficulty in stopping and thinking... what other games happened? I just felt that that was. I think what really for me gives it the edge is that on paper it had all the hallmarks of being a classic, and you really hope that it would live up to the expectation. And yeah, obviously, you know, the kind of scoreline flattered a little bit, you know, in certainly in terms of how close it was. But in terms of the French performance, in terms of the Pavard's goal was just extraordinary. I'm going to give that. I know it's probably an obvious shout, but I'm going to give that as my choice.
I'd go for my one's Brazil Belgium. I thought it was the consummate game of two halves. I thought Belgium were so good in the first half, and then Brazil came out and gave it a real go, and probably, if their finishing had been better, should have actually won the game. Between a combination of poor finishing and Courtois in the goal was actually the difference. The Courtois save late in the game was absolutely out of this world, and Coutinho's miss was one he'll remember for a long, long time. So I'm going to go for Brazil and Belgium. That brings us to the end of our series of World Cup specials on Soccer Report Extra. There's six of them we've covered over the last, I guess, five and a bit weeks, if you consider the start of just the week leading into the tournament. It's been great fun. My mind has been one of the best tournaments. It's actually been the best World Cup I can remember. On behalf of producer Luke Crawford, Owen O'Callaghan, and Bobby McMahon, thank you for listening. For someone who's so keen to snuggle, you
cause a lot of trouble. Thanks for listening to Soccer Report Extra. To keep tabs on the podcast and get all the latest news, musings, and rants from Bobby and Owen, like us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Music for this podcast graciously provided by Manitoba's hottest indie pop group, Misery Slims. Check them out on Spotify and YouTube, and follow the band on Facebook at Misery Slims.